to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the second hour of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm James Edwards. He's Keith Alexander. We ended up covering a lot of items, a lot of topics for conversation during the first hour, and the second and third will be no different. You know, Sam Bushman, our owner, our producer, came into my ear during the break and said he just sent me over a story, which we'll get to in a moment, about Detroit being the most intolerable, miserable city to live in the country. And we can probably help shed light on why that is. But it reminded me of a story we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the show, in that I think 7%, that's less than 10, that's single digits, 7% of the eighth graders in the Detroit public school system could read at an eighth grade level, were reading proficient at their grade level. 7% of all the eighth graders in the Detroit public schools could read. And they were much worse in math. Well, Keith, I got to play this clip. I'm not sure now that I think about it if white students are that much smarter with regard. Well, maybe they can read. Maybe they can do math at a proficient level. But when it comes to history and knowledge, general knowledge of civics and geography, they are woefully ignorant. We're going to play a clip now that came from a public high school. These are high school students, not eighth graders. These are high school students in Washington. They keep asking the question, what's the capital of Washington? You might say, well, I don't know.
Washington State.
Yeah, Washington State. And the answer is Olympia. And they keep that's why they ask that question a couple of times. It's not a trick question. They're asking people in the state of Washington what their own capital is. But there's some other questions too. And this just gives you a glimpse into what. And this is not scripted. It's just a guy going into a high school and asking students some. Well, you can listen. Here it is.
Hi, I'm Austin, and you are watching One Scholars, where we put the bright young minds of our student body to the test.
Do you know the capital of Washington State?
Seattle.
Olympia.
What is the capital of Washington?
Seattle.
Olympia.
Olympia.
Can you name one Democratic candidate for the 2012 presidential campaign?
No.
Nope. You can't do that one either.
Barack Obama, because he's running again, right?
Do you know the Vice President of the United States? George Bush is the vice president.
The bald guy. He was going to run for it, and he has Clinton, right?
Bill Clinton, the vice president, Bill Clinton.
Yeah, Bill Clinton.
Yes, you did. Correcto. Sarah Palin?
Yeah, I don't think that's right either.
I don't think it is either.
I don't know who it is. It's somebody. Bin Laden.
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden! Joe Biden! Is that right? Joe Biden.
There you go. In what war did the U.S. gain its independence?
I don't know.
The British War.
The Civil War.
That one.
That one.
That one.
That one.
The Civil War. Civil War.
Just did this, so I don't remember.
I was never taught that knowledge.
So I don't.
Civil War?
That thing, that war.
I don't know.
To tell you the truth.
How about I just give you a couple wars and you can pick from a list?
Okay.
Alright, Korean War?
Korean War?
Yes or no?
Yes.
The Korean War is when we gain our independence. Korean War. Civil War. Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
Revolutionary War.
American Revolution.
Yeah, American Revolution. You got a fist. That's the one.
Can you name all of the countries that border the United States?
South America.
Mexico.
Boom. One.
Mexico.
South America. Mexico and South America.
America. Mexico and Canada.
There's too many.
There's too many? Okay.
Dude, Canada? That's a state, never mind.
Mexico, Canada. You sure that's it?
Can you think of a country that starts with the letter U?
You go. Can you? That one.
Ukraine.
Uganda.
And Uruguay, you're famous.
Uruguay. Uruguay's another one.
Europe. That starts with an E.
Uzbekistan. That's all I can think of.
United States.
Or United States. I don't know. Utopia.
What country are we in? Oh, United States.
United States starts with a U.
Oh my god.
How many stars are on the flag?
51.
51? Why?
51 states.
52. Why? 52 states. 51 states.
And how many stars are on the flag?
51.
51? No, 50.
52.
52? 50.
Why is that?
Because there's 50 states, 48 mainland, and 2 that are outside. One that is connected to Canada named Alaska, and one out in the sea named Hawaii.
Thank you for watching. We hope you enjoyed our programming. Keep in mind, these students were caught off guard and out of the classroom. But they signed a legal document protecting us from any legal action. Also, my mom's a lawyer.
All right, so folks, that was an all-white public school in Washington State, and this was a high school. They couldn't, you know, about 25% of them, I guess, got correct answers, but for the most part, they didn't know how many states were in the country. They didn't know what countries bordered America. They didn't know who the vice president was. I mean, we've seen stuff like this in Harlem where Howard Stern goes out and does the man on the street interviews with Obama voters, but this was Washington State, a high school, a white high school. So it begs the question, are the schools doing their job? And I would say the answer is yes, because I guarantee you every one of those students are well-versed. They could tell you anything you wanted to know about Martin Luther King, Harriet Tubman, and Frederick Douglass, Keith. But on everything else, we got 30 seconds. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to let Keith tear into this one. That clip was a little bit longer than I remembered it being. But this is crazy. I'm telling you. You know, we posted to the website a couple of weeks ago a test from the late 1800s that you had to take to graduate from high school in Kansas, an eighth grade achievement test. Yeah, excuse me, not the high school. You had to name all of the capitals of all the European nations. I mean, these kids weren't being quizzed on the Zambian space program. They were asked how many states are in the country, how many stars are on the flag. High schoolers in Washington State, and they couldn't get it. Very few. Keith's chomping at the bit, and we're going to let him, we're going to put that bit in his mouth and ride him like a horse when we come back. Stay tuned, everybody.
When camping overnight, your tent is one of the most important items you'll have with you. That's why it's vital to have a quality tent that is easy to carry and will withstand the elements. Teton Sports offers top quality tents for any of your camping needs. The Outfitter XXL cot tent weighs only 4 pounds, but provides plenty of space for a comfortable night's sleep. Teton Sports also has a 6-man tent, which weighs only 14 pounds for camping overnight with friends and family. Each tent is easy to assemble and is easily transportable, and each is made with 1200mm coated polyester, providing strong and durable protection from weather and cold. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, backpacks, duffels, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Wherever your outdoor adventures take you, you will be safe and comfortable in a quality tent from Teton Sports. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Yeah? Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain in that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not. Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
When the truth is found to be...
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, Keith was... silently and patiently waiting throughout that excruciating first segment where the ignorance of America's youth was really, really on display. So this is from the enlightened left coast, Washington State, and you saw that they weren't even able to answer the most basic questions that I think I was born knowing. And I think it's all by design, Keith. I think you'd have a hard time convincing me otherwise. I'm sure you wouldn't want to. I'm sure you're on the same wavelength here. But, you know, you want mindless drones like this going out there, because how are they going to oppose? How are they going to have enough sense and civic responsibility to oppose what's coming down the pike out of Washington, D.C., if they don't know any more than that?
You know, it's incredible to me that we here in Red State America are supposed to feel inferior to these people. These are supposedly the with it folks from the left coast, where everything is groovy, where public education is wonderful, it's Lake Wobegon, where all the kids are above average. What an average. I'm telling you, this, if nothing else, shows the absolute crying need for private schools in America today. This is the sad legacy of the Brown versus Board of Education decision back in 1954. This is what it has done to American public education, which used to be near, if not at, the very top of the developed world. Now we're at the bottom of the developed world. And I don't think it's just a matter of the pumping in of all these minorities into America from the third world. I think the left, when they are left to their own devices, trying to, you know, that they're in total control of academia. The long cultural Marxist march through the institutions has definitely gone through the public school system. And this is a result. You've got people that, I mean, they couldn't unscrew a bell of, you know, what do they call it, a bell jar or whatever it is. These people are absolutely incredibly stupid. This is a disgrace, and these are people that are supposed to be from an area where public education is good. Heaven help us. You know, no wonder, you know, I can't imagine that the kids in Detroit could actually do worse than this. What in the world has happened to American public education? If this doesn't get you in line trying to get your children into a private school, then nothing will. The public schools of America, even in supposedly nice white majority areas like Washington State, apparently are mind-numbingly bad. They are, you know, this is a black hole of Calcutta. Who could trust their child to go to school when this is a result? And like you said, compare that with the test that you had to pass in order to be certified to be an eighth grade graduate in Kansas in 1895 that we ran on the Cesspool blog a couple of months ago. I mean, I don't think you could get a master's candidate at Washington State University that could pass it.
Well, you just really can't say enough about this story. Again, folks, to belabor the point, we're talking about high school students here. If you asked a first grader in my class back in 86, 87, when I was in first grade, how many stars were on the flag, how many states there were in the country, maybe somebody couldn't answer the question. Maybe in first grade. And this just goes back to the 80s. You know, Keith's talking about, you know, the advanced math and government and social studies and English, the prerequisites, geography that you had to know in the late 1800s to pass eighth grade. I'm talking about just fast forward into the 80s, and I think everybody in my first grade class could have answered these questions. I mean, you're talking about high school students that said America won its independence in the Korean War. They didn't know what countries bordered ours. They didn't, of course, know the number of states and so on and so forth. And again, Keith, I think this is absolutely by design. You have to have people this dumbed down in order to have these mindless zombies that go out there and vote and allow the government to continue doing to us what they are doing. But it makes it very easy for them to run over people like us because we're so few. This is absolutely intolerable.
Well, I mean, it's laughable. And more than that, this is what I have always maintained liberals were trying to accomplish in the first place. Their first impulse was to raise blacks and other non-whites to the level of whites. Failing at that impossible dream, they settled for Plan B, and Plan B was to dumb down white people to the level of the minorities. And I think, quite frankly, a minority kid going to a all black segregated school in the South in 1954 would have run circles around this group out in Washington State of all white kids. This is what liberalism has done to our native land, folks. This is what has happened to the wonderful inheritance that we got from the founding fathers. This is where we are due to the baleful influence of liberalism in American life today.
Switching gears now, a little bit of good news, and this is going to appear on the blog next week. Just a quick hit here. A gentleman who appeared as our featured guest twice last year is going to be the subject of a new movie that is in production now, and it's going to be coming out soon. Remember Robert Mazur, the former DEA agent who infiltrated Pablo Escobar's cartel? He was on the show with us twice back last year, and so his life is being turned into a movie, so it's good to have people on the show like that from time to time, Keith. Of course, last year was a pretty big year for us in terms of guests. In addition to Robert Mazur, who we're talking about now, Ray Stevens, Congressman Walter Jones, and there were several others. And so anyway, we were excited about that. That was an interview that the Bombardier, Eddie Miller, put together. And so now that story, which was recounted on the show, is now being turned into a movie. So we're excited about that. Next week, Eddie's going to be delivering an expose on Dick Cheney, and he had the Keith knows what I'm talking about. That's an inside joke, but the rest is true. So congratulations to our friend Robert Mazur.
Eddie probably ought to be a talent scout for Steven Spielberg and the rest of these Hollywood producers and directors, because look at this, Eddie finds this guy, plucks him from obscurity, and the next thing you know, he's on a magic carpet ride through Hollywood. He's going to have a movie made about his life. You know, Eddie is better than any Hollywood talent scout. He's probably better than this tells you what we're dealing with in Hollywood. Hollywood, basically a bunch of rank amateurs like us, can come up with people that, you know, Hollywood's up here scratching their head saying, where'd these people come from? You know, we dig them out and Hollywood profits from them.
Well, and don't forget, I won't take sole credit for that, but he was on our show, and nevertheless, maybe a coincidence. Warner Brothers sought us out. Keith, that is no joke. Warner Brothers sought us out to help him promote Gods and Generals, the re-release for the commemorative 150-year anniversary of the war between the states, and they re-released the great film Gods and Generals. So that was Warner Brothers coming to the political cesspool for help in marketing. And... well, we've had a few hits and misses, but a lot of hits, I'll tell you that. One more thing. I was telling you about those drones a second ago. We talked about it on Sam Bushman's show. You know, you can remember the good old days when you thought that Terminator 2 was just a science fiction movie, where these things are about the size of an insect. They can be released in swarms. They can be released individually, and they are equipped with video surveillance capabilities. I mean, these are tiny little things. They can perch on a wall, perch on a lamp post, wherever they need to be. Some are also equipped with detonators to where they can be little bee-like assassins. I mean, it's crazy. We're going to have the whole story at thepoliticalcesspool.org in a couple of days, so be sure to check the website for more information about that. This is really scary stuff. We'll be back with more right after this.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cofcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, a quick update. You know, last week we spent the entirety of the second hour filling you in on what's going on behind the scenes with the renaming of the three Confederate parks here in Memphis, Tennessee. We spent an exhaustive hour breaking it down, recounting the role we had in protecting and preserving those parks in 2005, and the political cesspool received sole credit for doing so, and rightfully so, because we were the only ones who rode to the defense of the parks. Well, that was 2005, where we attracted a couple of hundred people to our vigil. We outmaneuvered Al Sharpton, had a bigger turnout, forced him to cancel his march, and it was all well documented. Well, this year, a couple of weeks ago, when they voted to rename the park, there was no public forum. There was no chance to mobilize an opposition. The city council just went straight to it and voted for it unanimously to rename the parks. The feckless SCV, to use Keith's favorite adjective, once again abdicated their position of authority. They didn't step to the plate in 2005. They left a vacuum to be filled, and we filled it. Thankfully, we were there to step to the plate. This year, another void has been left because the Sons of Confederate Veterans is not doing their job. And this time, unfortunately, it's been filled by, allegedly going to be filled by the Ku Klux Klan. Now, when I heard news that there was going to be this big Klan rally in Memphis, I mean, my first response was, of course, stay away from it. We don't want to have anything to do with people like that. But secondly, I said, they were saying there's going to be thousands of Klansmen. Well, anybody that knows anything knows that the Ku Klux Klan, for all intents and purposes, is defunct and non-existent in this day and age. If there are 10 Klansmen in a room together, five of them are going to be FBI agents, but you'd be lucky to get 10 in a room. Well, we were saying this. We were saying, you know, look, what's going on here is two things, you know, because Memphis, all the network affiliates here in Memphis have been touting this huge Klan rally that's supposed to be held in March in opposition to the name change of the parks. And again, I say this is the SCV's fault for allowing this to occur, because if they had stepped up to the plate, other people wouldn't have to. Thankfully, in 05, it was us. Unfortunately, this time, it's the supposed Klan. But I looked at it very skeptically when I heard the news that thousands of Klansmen were coming. I said, you know, one of two things. This is either the leftists trying to make those who support the parks look bad, or it's just a ruse. It's somebody just saying that they're a representative of the Klan and phoning into the news stations that there's going to be this huge rally. Either way, no matter what, let's just say it's legit and there is a handful of Klansmen that are going to come. It will be no more than a handful. And again, we want our people to stay away from that. But here's the thing. That's my take on it. And apparently it's the Southern Poverty Law Center's take as well. We've caught them in a moment of inadvertent truth. They have told the truth by accident. The radical left-wing SPLC keeps going back and forth. One minute they're claiming that the Ku Klux Klan is a huge national threat for which they need millions of dollars in donations to fight. The next minute, they confess that the Klan actually isn't any threat at all. Mark Potok, who is one of the head honchos at the SPLC, blasted the Memphis media for claiming that the Klan could have a large rally here in our city. He said that even if a whole bunch of Klan groups joined forces, their rally wouldn't amount to anything, and I agree with him on that. But for the past 20 years, this is what's so head-scratching, the SPLC has been relentless fundraising on the platform that the KKK is a huge movement that represents a major threat to the general public. Potok stated on an SPLC blog entry this week that it is not even remotely likely, quote-unquote, that the Klan rally in Memphis would be substantial. Potok went on to say that it would be a surprise if all of the Klan groups in a multi-state area could collectively come up with 40 people. Now, the SPLC publishes a quarterly magazine to hype the fictional threat of KKK and neo-Nazis. According to the SPLC's own website, they have published 261 articles that contain the phrase Ku Klux Klan in the last 57 issues of their magazine. We've done the research on this. That is 4.5 articles about the Klan per issue. Articles about the Klan dominates the SPLC magazine. Critics on the right and the left routinely chastise the SPLC for using this non-existent threat of Klan violence in their fundraising letters. Potok went on to make the absurd and easily disprovable claim about the Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest, who again has a park here. His remains are buried there. Potok claims that that Forrest was a violent, guttural racist who became a millionaire running one of the country's most brutal slave yards. The truth is that Forrest's entire stint in the slave trading business consisted of selling 12 slaves. He then left the profession and said that he found it to be distasteful. Forrest became very wealthy selling horses and real estate. He used his own personal fortune to purchase supplies for the Confederate Army at the beginning of the War of Northern Aggression. Potok's articles went on to talk about the supposed massacre of black Union soldiers at Fort Pillow, which we have debunked on this show. But look, nevertheless, the fact of the matter is that the SPLC inadvertently told the truth about the Klan. They don't exist. There's not going to be a big Klan rally here. Okay, that's all well and good. We're happy to hear it. But why have you mentioned them 261 times in the last year in your magazine? If they couldn't get 40 people to show up at a major multi-state initiative here in Memphis. So Keith, SPLC foot and mouth or what?
Well, the SPLC is just what we expect them to be, which is a bunch of bald-faced liars. They have lied to what Harper's Magazine called the Holocaust-haunted survivors of, you know, in the Jewish community that are typically in their 80s, have plenty of money, and they apparently have visions of the movie Birth of a Nation printed in their DNA now. And they can't imagine any threat to them or to black people other than the Ku Klux Klan. Everything else kind of leaves everybody, underwhelmed. But there are not enough Klansmen out there. Apparently, the Klan has to live in legend because it doesn't live in reality anymore in America. They're trying to turn Tony Perkins of the American Family Council and James Dobson of Focus on the Family into Klansmen or Klansmen substitutes. They're also trying to turn us here at the Political Cesspool into Klansmen substitutes because there just aren't enough Klansmen to go around. But nothing rings their chimes like Klansmen. In fact, it's probably a good thing that the Klan wears hoods, because if you took those hoods off, you'd probably find Heidi Beirich and Mark Potok under them. They're so desperate to try to gin up a Klan. In fact, I would imagine that a lot of Hollywood actors are out there under Klan robes and in Klan hoods. That's their present acting gig, because they've got to produce these people one way or another, or else the whole scam is up. They cannot scare their contributors into contributing the type of money that is needed to support Potok, Byrick, and Morris Dees in the lavish lifestyle they've come to be accustomed to. Now, somebody did step to the plate, though, here at the Memphis Parks. Let me correct James on this. The SCV stood up. They kept the information from all other groups like us, and like Casey at the Bat, like the old poem from the 19th century, Casey at the Bat, the SCV, like Casey, came up to the plate and struck out, and there's no joy in Mudville, otherwise known as Memphis, because of that. These people are totally feckless. There is no better adjective for them than that, and that's because they insist upon following the guideposts of political correctness. If you're going to defeat a group like the SPLC, or like the consolidated black power structure that governs Memphis at the present time, you've got to think outside the box. And the box you've got to think outside of is political correctness. Unfortunately, the sons of Confederate veterans are eaten up with political correctness. They are, you know, they are the poster children for political correctness, and they're also the poster children for why political correctness was devised in the first place. If you follow political correctness, the left knows you cannot effectively resist their agenda. That's why they put it in place in the first instance. Duh. That's why political correctness exists. Political correctness is not some organic, agreed standard of good taste. It is something that is forced upon the American people by liberal leftist overlords who are very interested in making sure that no effective opposition can be mounted to their initiatives to transform America. And if you want to know what this transformation looks like, look back at the last quarter hour that we had and listen to those kids in the Seattle, Washington public schools and see what a number they've done on a group of kids that probably has the brain power to, you know, excel, but in a public school setting in today's America, they're fed nothing but gibberish, and they have nothing to repeat but gibberish when asked questions.
We'll be back with more right after this. Stay tuned.
We'll return. We'll return.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
All right.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, keep in mind, last week, second hour, check it out if you're interested in the Confederate Park controversy, for lack of a better word. And we really blew it out. But now we're talking about the fact that the SPLC told the truth by mistake with regards to the non-existent Klan threat. It really matches what we say, and good for them for telling the truth, but why use the Klan as a fundraising ploy so very often? But in addition to the fact that Potok and the SPLC took to task the Memphis reporting on the Klan rally, or the supposed Klan rally, they used the last little bit of their article to attack Forrest specifically for the Fort Pillow massacre. Well, I'm going to ask you to fill in the blanks about that, Keith, but Lincoln's own staff, for what it's worth, admitted that that was a fake story and documents that were declassified after the war. In reality, Forrest's generous treatment of Union POWs was legendary in the North. Union officers thanked Forrest for the way that he treated captured members of their command in that war. And after the Civil War, Forrest enjoyed celebrity status in the North as well as the South. You know, when he was being transported for his court-martial to Washington, you know, when people knew that Forrest was on that boat that was transporting him, they all wanted his autograph. They all wanted to shake his hand. He was being, you know, kept under guard by Union soldiers, and they all wanted to meet him because they were in so much awe of him. And then even his greatest nemesis, Sherman, who was a war criminal if there ever was one, found him not guilty of any wrongdoing in Fort Pillow. But why tell the truth when a lie so better serves your agenda?
You hit the nail on the head there, James. Here's what it's all about. Slavery, American slavery, the enslavement of black people by white people in the South has to be the reason for the Civil War, because if it is not the reason for the Civil War, then the Civil War isn't worth studying from the vantage point or the viewpoint of the American modern-day left. Leftists have to have a reason. They have to serve their purposes. And therefore, it has to be absolutely essential that the Civil War was caused by slavery, and the Civil War was a mighty crusade in which all righteous people, in particular people from the North who are righteous by definition, went to war to free these slaves. Well, that's not the way it happened, folks. I hate to burst your bubble, or if I don't think anybody in our audience needs their bubble burst, because they know that slavery wasn't the cause of the Civil War. Let me tell you that abolitionists in antebellum America, that's before the Civil War, were considered the lunatic left fringe of American politics. Abraham Lincoln wasn't one. Very few people were. Maybe William Lloyd Garrison, maybe Gilbert Havens, maybe Harriet Tubman, maybe Sojourner Truth, and a couple of other chronic malcontents like Ida B. Wells were actually abolitionists who thought vaguely like modern-day liberals do about race, but hardly anybody did back then. And Forrest was a plantation owner first and foremost. He owned slaves, but then so did George Washington, so did Thomas Jefferson, so did Patrick Henry, so did most of the really significant founding fathers, a few in New England. And, you know, it's amazing how few of the really stellar founding fathers, the ones that you could name today as being founding fathers without an exhaustive knowledge of the founding of America, you know, they were Southerners, and therefore they were slave owners, because as members of the upper crust of society, they, one, had large agricultural operations, and to man those, that's all that they could do. You know, they had to use slaves. And as a result of that, there's, you know, what happened in the American Civil War, first of all, about Fort Pillow, let's go to that. What is so often overlooked about Fort Pillow is the year when this happened, 1864. What else was going on in America in 1864? Well, it was the campaign for the presidency in 1864. It was Lincoln's bid for re-election. And things weren't going nearly as well as he had predicted and the Northern press had predicted. They thought they were going to have a short war, that they were going to rout these ill-equipped and outnumbered Confederates with ease. But here it was, a war that was going into its third year, and the matter still wasn't decided. In fact, the first commander of the Northern Army of the Potomac, the main Northern Army, George McClellan, was a Copperhead Democrat who was running against Lincoln. And had McClellan been elected, he would have sued for peace with the South, and the South would have been allowed to be a separate country. So Lincoln and his equivalent of David Axelrod today, you know, his inner circle of campaign advisors, had to gin up interest to portray Lincoln, one, as being a winner, a guy that was winning the war, and two, that the Confederates were really lousy people. And they manufactured this whole Fort Pillow incident basically out of thin air. Forrest could not have been commanding his troops effectively because he had two horses shot out from under him when he came to Fort Pillow under a flag of truce, trying to talk the Union commanders and the forces at Fort Pillow into surrendering. Now, he was injured in the second of these shootings and was in a hospital being treated, a field hospital, so he wasn't out there directing his troops. Furthermore, he was famous for being very solicitous and very good with the people that were captured from the Union Army by his armies. Why? Well, the South was constantly and chronically short of manpower. They didn't have nearly as many people to draw from to populate their army as the North did. So Southerners and Southern commanders were constantly interested in having prisoner exchanges. And they wanted to facilitate prisoner exchanges so they could replenish their troops. Now, you didn't facilitate prisoner exchanges by being a martinet or an ogre or a cruel person. In fact, he was just the opposite. The ogres were U.S. Grant and William T. Sherman, who picked up on the fact that the South needed prisoner exchanges, and as a result, they would not allow prisoner exchanges. Lincoln approved of this policy. That's one of the reasons he chose Grant to be his supreme commander after the Vicksburg campaign on the Eastern Front, because he knew he could be depended upon, like Lincoln, to apply the terrifying calculus of the war, which was that the North just simply had more people to throw on the pile than the Southerners did. So consequently, that's what happened. They, you know, for example, when Grant became the supreme commander of the troops in the Eastern Theater, before him there would be a big battle, then about a month or a month and a half delay before the next major engagement. When Grant became the commander, you had he and Lee lock up in May, and they didn't unlock until the end of July. Almost 2.5 months of constant warfare, in which the South strategically won every one of these battles: Cold Harbor, Battle of the Crater, Spotsylvania Courthouse, all of these things. But they were losing the war because Lee's Army of Northern Virginia was suffering casualties that they could not replace, while Grant's Army of the Potomac was suffering even more casualties, but they could easily replace their casualties. This is the background that you never hear about when the Civil War is taught in today's schools and universities. This is not going to be found in that Doris Kearns Goodwin book. She's a black historian, quote unquote, who wrote the book on Lincoln that Steven Spielberg converted into his movie. I can't get on my mic, son. I'm sorry. Just stop telling me about it, okay? I'm talking to the people back at the show, okay? So consequently, this is what the background is for the whole approach towards the Civil War that you get from the American academic establishment today and from the entertainment media. This constant drumbeat that the war was all about slavery. It wasn't about slavery. You need to look up Google this particular phrase in your Google box and you'll find out all about why it wasn't about slavery. It's called the Corwin Amendment. It was the proposed first 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which would have said that slavery was to remain forever free, legal and inviolate in all states and territories where it was then legal. And Abraham Lincoln sent a handwritten letter to the governor of every state in the Union asking that they ratify this in their state legislature so that the Constitution of the United States could be amended to put this in. If the war had been about slavery, that would have answered it. But the war wasn't about slavery. It was the South seceding. They knew about the Corwin Amendment, but they did not want to be lose their right of self-determination that their forefathers had fought so valiantly for in the American Revolution.
All right, folks, that's the end of the second hour, third and final forthcoming right after this on the Political Cesspool Radio program.